everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with Tom Fairbanks. Tom, engineering and producing our program. Tom, did you get, on your way in, did you get caught up in that, what a mess over on I-10 this morning?
I did.
Yeah, what's going on?
I was in the eastbound lanes of I-10, and as we were approaching and going through the I-10, I-19 crossing, traffic started slowing down. A bunch of semis up, kind of making a wall. So sure. It was hard to get over to the outside lane so that you could get off. And finally, I made my way off and got off at Keno Parkway. But traffic was virtually stopped for a time because of that crash that happened. It looked like it was between Valencia and Wilmont. There was a report of a sport utility vehicle that was traveling westbound on I-10, crossed the median and collided with a pickup truck that was traveling in the eastbound lanes.
Oh, boy.
And that's where the crash occurred, and that's why the eastbound traffic on I-10 was backed up. Both drivers died at the scene.
Oh, boy. So that was a small vehicle that actually crossed over the median. You have to wonder whether the driver might have fallen asleep or what might have happened.
Well, my speculation is pure speculation. It was possibly distracted driving.
Ooh,
looking at their smartphone and thinking in your mind, you think you're still going straight. But in the meantime, the car or your vehicle you're driving is slowly drifting away off the freeway or off the interstate.
Oh, gosh, what a mess. All right, we are off and running. It is Friday, March 21st, 2025, the first Friday of spring. Tim Stellar has just walked in. Tim from the Arizona Daily Star, not only the Arizona Daily Star, but award-winning columnist for the Star. And Tim's been at the Star for now, about 30?
It's going toward 30.
It's going toward 30.
97, let me see, 28 years.
28 years. Well, thank you for staying in town. You do make a difference. Thank you, Tim. All right. We are in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio, which is part of the Bustos Media Center. We're located here in central Tucson. We've got five radio stations under one roof. This one is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's Voice, for trusted live news and talk. We're in our 15th year with the radio program and my 37th year here in Tucson Radio and TV. We have our worldwide live listening podcast of the show at buckmastershow.com when we do our telephone interviews. And that live line number, 520-790-2040, that is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. A couple of quick media shout-outs. Our friends at TucsonSentinel.com, Dylan Smith and his team, very supportive of our work, as is Dan Scheer down in Green Valley at the Green Valley News, and Saharita Sun and Caitlin Schmidt, the former award-winning reporter for the Arizona Daily Star, who has started her own online news service. Started that at the close of last year, doing very well with her service called Tucson Spotlight. Our Friday Focus interview on the live line is Pima County Health Director Teresa Cullen. Dr. Cullen, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure. Tell me how concerned you are about the measles outbreak and what we're seeing in Texas and New Mexico. And I don't know, have we had a case here in Arizona yet of this?
No, we have not had a case yet this year. Mm-hmm. There were a few cases last year, though none in Pima County. The last case in our county was in 2019. In terms of how concerned I am, well, the really good news is that we have been doing a lot of what we call tabletop exercises within the health department, which means we do a simulation if something would happen. Specifically, the latest ones have been related to measles. I feel like if we identified a case of measles, we would be able to respond rapidly, appropriately, protect the community. Now, the dependency, however, is on a provider or a healthcare system recognizing the case of measles. And as many people know, most healthcare providers have never seen measles. So one of the things we're trying to do, or we are doing, is really pushing out information to the healthcare community about what does measles look like, how you can recognize it, and when you're not sure, call us, and we'll help walk you through it.
The Board of Supervisors this week, I believe, directed you to step up or increase the awareness of how important childhood vaccines are. Could you tell us a little bit about that, please?
Yeah, Supervisor Hunt had reached out to the administrator, who then subsequently reached out to us about how to increase awareness of what measles was, once again, for the healthcare providers and for the community, for parents, but also this recognition that the concept of herd immunity really matters with a disease like measles. So the goal is to have a 95% vaccination rate. And what we're specifically looking at is the kindergarten vaccination rates. There's rates available for early childhood education for kindergarten and six. But kindergarten is the time when most kids end up in school, whether it's a charter school, public, parochial, and get exposed to other children. So those rates are below 95% throughout the county. The vast majority of schools are, well, not the vast majority, but a majority of schools are above 95%. What we were charged with by the board is to come up with a plan to identify the schools that are less than 95% at kindergarten and offer mobile vaccinations on site to those facilities if they choose to want to engage in that. So we're in the process of developing that. So the board gave us 90 days. I'm thinking we can come back before that to give them the plan to move that ahead.
All right, let's bring in our friend Tim Steller of The Star.
Hello, Dr. Cullen.
Hi, Tim.
So it's been a couple of months since Donald Trump and his administration came into office. I assume there have been some changes or some things you've had to respond to from the federal level since Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is the head of Health and Human Services there. Can you tell us about some of the things that have changed and that you've had to respond to?
Yeah, I think I'll just start with our grants. I want to, I'll remind people that a little less than 50% of our budget is our grants. Now, they're not all federal grants. Some of them, however, are federal grants to the state and then to us. So ultimately, it's federal grant cycle. We have a few large grants that got caught up in the early recommendations that if you had anything with diversity, equity, or inclusion, that those grants needed to be stopped. Then you'll recall a lot of this is now in the courts. Those things have been lifted. So we were responding quite rapidly to those considerations when they were coming down. We were evaluating what we were doing, whether it was potentially at risk from the federal guidance. The CDC, however, and those are all CDC grants, Center for Disease Control, guidance for stoppage has been lifted now, so those grants are all continuing. So we have no direct impact on any of our funding at the current time. The other thing that we are aware of, however, as we talk about vaccinations, for instance, is we follow what's happening with the committees on immunization that are national that help guide whether new vaccines should come up or whether the rates and the time frame with which we give vaccines get modified, and planning for the flu vaccine in the fall. You may be aware two of the major committees did not meet. We do expect that they will hopefully meet in the next month or two. But what that meant was that there's been an increased lack of insight, lack of planning on our part to prepare for instance, the flu vaccine in the fall. There's also some new guidance about data collection, and we rely heavily on our own internal data collection, but also what we're seeing from the state and the federal level. to do any kind of predictive analytics or indicate that we may have a situation that we need to be aware of, similar to what we're seeing with measles right now. That just came down this week, and we're in the process of evaluating the potential impact on that in terms of access to information that would help guide decision making.
How about diversity, equity, and inclusion policies or programs that the health department has? I know that over time you've targeted different groups and that sort of thing, mm-hmm. and I've heard that maybe you are being held to account for having such programs.
Yeah, I think we are held to account for those programs. As you know, however, public health is dependent on ensuring health equity. When you look at the 10 primary functions of public health, this is have been developed over the last 20 years. If I could show it to you, what you would see is a circle with the 10 things around it, but in the middle is health equity. So I think it's important for people to understand what health equity means. What that means is that we evaluate the data, for instance, who has, and I'll pick something that most people are familiar with, who has hypertension? Are we adequately evaluating and providing resources to communities so that we can see understanding of prevention for hypertension, screening for hypertension, diagnosis for hypertension, treatment for hypertension, and finally prevention of tertiary complications occur evenly across the board. So when we talk about health equity, what we're talking about is there a geographic area? Is there an age distribution? Is there a gender distribution? Is there an ethnic, racial distribution that's more at risk?
So are you being asked not to do that kind of thing? Not to look at, for example, ethnicity or race in your analysis of these illnesses or pathologies or what have you?
You know, Tim, it's such a great question. Nobody has asked us, if you could see me, I'm doing air quotes. but there's a concern that the way diversity, equity, and inclusion is being interpreted may ultimately apply to health equity, which we would say is a different conceptual model. However, we have had this discussion with our partners at CDC. And what we've been encouraged to look at, which it turns out we've been looking at anyway, is geography as an indication of where we should put our resources. It turns out geography, you know, if you think of a census tract, it reflects who is in that census tract, the demographics of that census tract. But if by indicating that we're doing it by geography, so for instance, this 5-block area, which happens to have demographic factors that may reflect gender, race, socioeconomic differences, but we can define it by geography. We'll define by geography. Does that help answer it? So it's kind of so it's a different way to be able to identify who's at risk. But the bottom line is geography reflects all those other things.
Dr. Cullen with us, Dr. Teresa Cullen, the Pima County Health Director, our Friday Focus interview. Tim Steller is here from the Arizona Daily Star. And before we take our first break, could you give us an update? How are we doing here? Is the flu season, RSV season, COVID season? Where are we with all of the big three?
Yeah, so, you know, we're still not great, but we're better. So RSV is higher than we would normally expect this time of year, but the numbers are going down. Flu is higher than we would normally see. And the way we compare it is to the last 5 years. So we're still higher than the last 5 years, but once again, we're on the downslope. And COVID is low. So COVID is significantly lower than it's been in the last 5 years. So RSV and flu are still out there. Remember, I know it is spring, but it's still only March. It's not too late for people to get their flu shots and get evaluated to see whether they should get the RSV vaccine and their COVID vaccines.
If folks have had the RSV, like myself, is that an annual shot or is that one good for a while?
That one's good for a while. Mm-hmm. And it depends on your age and your risk. So you're probably fine for right now.
Okay, let's take a break. Dr. Cullen, stick around for segment number two, which will be coming up very shortly. Tim Steller is here. He's my co-media host. We do that on Fridays here with our Friday Newsmaker interview. We'll be right back. It's Buckmaster on a Friday afternoon in Tucson, Arizona. Be right back. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com. Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Our Friday Focus interview today, Pima County Health Director Teresa Cullen is on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. With me in studio, I like to bring in someone from the media to co-host as we do our Friday Focus interview. And this week, it's my friend Tim Steller, who not only co-hosts with me, but when I'm going on vacation in May, I've got Tim down for at least, because I'll be gone a couple of weeks. I've got him down for one session. You starting to think about your guests now?
Nope.
Not yet.
That's not the way I work.
I know, you know me better than that. There's still plenty of time. But anyway, we'll talk about that. Dr. Cullen, here's Tim, and I think he's got a question about something that a lot of people have questions about in Tucson.
As you know, people see people using fentanyl and other drugs on the streets. I'm wondering what you know about the trends these days, that is, whether it's becoming more or less prevalent, that is, fentanyl use and addiction, meth use and addiction, you know, whether it's growing, and then also whether the effects are, you know, how the effects are playing out, that is, the deaths and overdoses and that sort of thing.
Thanks for that question, Tim. Yeah, we spend a lot of time here looking at the substance use disorder, as well as behavioral health issues and the situation with the unhoused, because there's a nexus between those three things, though not every individual is affected by all three of them. What we know is the overdose deaths are down. They're down over 20% in Pima County. That reflects the national trend that we're seeing. As I say to people, I would love to say I know exactly why that has happened, and I would love to be able to attribute it to a lot of the work we've been doing with the other jurisdictions and the other community-based organizations. I think some of it is due to Narcan being available, but a lot of it, I think we're still trying to sort out, and we're trying to do that with other large health departments as well as the CDC. At the same time, what we know is overdoses that are presenting to healthcare, so these are obviously not fatal in the vast majority of times, still have not seen a decrease. So the utilization of healthcare resources to respond to overdoses has remained stable. That's one reason we think that it may be Narcan that's contributing to the decreased deaths, because there's not an indication that overdoses themselves are decreasing.
Oh, that's interesting.
And at the same time, we are seeing reports of increased methamphetamine use. So it is possible that we will start to see a transition from fentanyl, which does respond to Narcan, to other drug use, substance use abuse out there in the community. I think it's important to note that we're all working together. I said this yesterday to somebody. We are the only large city and county that have pooled their opioid settlement dollars and are working together, along with, in our case, Marana and the city of South Tucson, to develop a comprehensive response plan. Now, we've been doing that for a while. Shout out to the other jurisdictions and the other CBOs, community-based organizations out there. Still a lot of work to do, still in the planning phase, so we hope to be done by May, of a really large tranche of opioid dollars going out to address certain parts of the opioid situation.
Is the do people die of methamphetamine overdoses the way they have of fentanyl? That does it tend that way? I have the sense that it doesn't, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, it doesn't. But remember, methamphetamine is a stimulant.
Yeah.
So when you die from, remember, opioids are depressants of the respiratory system. So that's usually how most people die. They quit breathing. Methamphetamine, on the other hand, is a stimulant. People do die from it. A lot of times people who have underlying cardiac disease will die, because all of a sudden it's like having a shot of epinephrine in your body in terms of the impact on you physiologically.
All right. We just had the 5-year anniversary of the outbreak of COVID-19. What was the lesson? What jumps out at you, Dr. Cullen? What's the lesson from COVID-19?
Interestingly enough, we have been doing a lot of work, even though it's 5 years later, doing an evaluation, what we would call an after action report. We hope to have that out in the next month or two, which may seem late, but it's taken us a while. I think there's lots of lessons learned. One is that we were not well prepared. And I think that that's why, when you asked me about measles, I wanted to reassure people that I do think we are prepared. And one of the reasons is because we got to exercise a lot of how to respond in especially those first 3 to 4 years of the pandemic. I think the other thing is that the need for us to effectively communicate and have bi-directional communication with not only the healthcare system, the other public health people, but also our community, that we ensure that we are as honest and as transparent as we can be with what we know at any moment in time, with the recognition that when things are novel, that we may not know everything that we need to know. And so we're making decisions along the way. And finally, I think the other, and there, we actually have many more of these, but the other one is how critical it is that we have data, that we have data that is in what we call near real-time, Bill, so that if there's a situation, an outbreak, if you think back, long-term care, congregate living, assisted living, if there's the beginnings of an outbreak, we can do early recognition. I'll give a shout out to our health department. We've spent a lot of time trying to figure out how do we evaluate whether we are effective in that area, that we do early recognition of an outbreak, which could be just norovirus. Remember, a lot of GI symptoms this winter, which was somewhat unpredictable, that we recognize we have an outbreak, we call it an outbreak, and then we do an intervention. And the quicker we can do all those things, the more likely we are to have an impact on stopping it. So we've been focusing a lot using our epidemiology staff to train not only them, but the rest of the health department to say, you know, we're all in this together. We have a large health department with multiple facets to it, and that working together with the community, with all those other organizations I noted, can help us achieve control, in quotes, and minimize the impact from any kind of epidemic situation.
It was so politicized, of course, and then the criticism is, did we overreact, perhaps in the early stages, Dr. Cullen?
Oh, Bill, it's such a hard question. I actually just listened to a report yesterday of a new book that came out about did we all overreact. I don't have a sense that we overreacted in the early parts because we didn't know what we were confronting. And you'll recall there were these predictions of innumerable deaths,
yes,
hundreds of thousands of deaths early on, mm-hmm, which thank goodness did not materialize. They did materialize over the course of the pandemic, but they didn't happen right away. So, and remember, you probably remember whether it, how is it transmitted? Is it respiratory droplets or is it in the air? Remember that big discussion?
Oh,
droplets,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just
yeah,
in the air. So I think as we learned more, we became more precise. But obviously, that's one of the issues, is how do we ensure that we put in place of what we would call a learning public health system, a system that can take new data that comes in, assess it quickly, and respond to it. The one other real lesson we did, which I think you probably are aware, is we set up an ethics committee. And the reason why we did that was there were such limited supplies in certain areas, and we did not want to be, we meaning me or just the health, mm-hmm, department, did not want to be the ones to say, okay, you get this and you don't get that, kind of that lifeboat ethics approach. Mm-hmm. So we set up this ethics committee that was incredibly helpful. You'll recall early on with the vaccine, we made some decisions about chaplains and other people that provided spiritual care to those while they were in the hospital or were dying, could get the vaccines early, even though they weren't considered healthcare providers. We changed who they were in our way of looking at it. And we did that in conjunction with the community. So I think a real lesson is we have to be part of the community and we have to continue to engender trust from the community as we go through things.
But that's really, I think, the key challenge. When I think back, you know, I think of the growing segment of the culture that rejected public health officials. You hear from them, or at least you used to hear from them, every couple of weeks at the Pima County Board of Supervisors, call to the audience, people who completely disbelieve everything you say. You had a rough ride at the state Senate, not getting approved for appointment as state health director. And it all derives from this same mistrust that Bill is talking about. I don't know if you can regain that trust, but or do you have to just say there's going to be a segment of society that doesn't trust me and public health in general?
Once again, a great question. I think the onus is on us, and by us I mean public health, to ensure that we are in and of the community. At the end of the day, one of the lessons we learned, obviously, is people make their own decisions. But we have a responsibility to ensure that we are sharing adequate information with people. The one thing we've done, Tim, recently is to try to regain some of that trust. We went on what we call a business roadshow, where, you know, there was a lot of pushback from businesses because of what happened. What we wanted businesses to know is, hey, we just don't do COVID. We do all this other stuff, especially if you're a restaurant, right? You're dealing with us pretty regularly. But let us share with you the resources that we have available for you so that you can share them with your staff or your constituents and know that public health is not just COVID. Public health is improving the health of you, your family, your neighbor, your community. At the end of the day, if we do that, we make this a more welcoming community. Business wants to be here. Schools want to open. There's just all this other positive result that comes from it. Let me just indulge myself a second here. The one metaphor I use a lot is that we set a table, and at that table, every person in this community needs to think that they can have a seat. So if you have hypertension and that's the only thing that affects your health status, let's see what the health department does with that in terms of making sure you can access resources. If you're someone else and you have a restaurant, let's make sure that we're sharing with you the information we have to how to keep you, your clients, your employees safe. If you're an older person that's isolated, what can we do for you to make sure that your loneliness isn't overwhelming? So, I mean, we have a pretty large responsibility that way, but I think that that's the way we combat what happened.
All right, Dr. Teresa Cullen, Pima County Health Director, going to let you go in a minute here. But first, speaking of restaurants and the food trucks, how can you assure folks that when they decide to buy from one of the food trucks that safety is a paramount concern of the health department?
Yeah. And the way we can do that, the way you do that as an individual is when you go there to a food truck, you can ask them to see that they have been licensed and regulated by the Pima County Health Department. The other thing we did, though, Bill, which we're the only county that did this, you remember there were all these fly-by-night food trucks down here. We didn't even know who they were, setting up everywhere. And we worked with law enforcement and confiscated some things and let law enforcement do what they did by saying that they're illegal. They can't be here. So we were quite successful there. Other counties haven't been that successful, but as far as I know, at least we're not getting the reports of every week or two, there's two or three non-licensed food trucks. And the other thing is, the reason we did this, we want to protect our businesses. These other businesses are doing it the right way. They're ensuring that there's food safety there, and we want to make sure for you, the consumer, that it's a safe adventure.
Should the food truck operator actually show a health license there when right at the front of their operation?
Yeah, it should be posted somewhere. It might not. I mean, some of them might not be at the front, but it should be there.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Dr. Cullen, always a pleasure. Thank you very much. I hope you have a great afternoon and a great weekend.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time. Thanks for letting us come on.
All right. Bye. It's our pleasure. Thank you, Dr. Teresa Cullen, Pima County Health Director. I've got a ton of things to go over and very little time with Tim Steller. We'll take a break right here and then segment three on Friday is Bill and the co-media host talking media stuff and news stuff right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Our thanks to Teresa Cullen, Dr. Cullen, Pima County Health Director, reflecting on a bunch of things, including the five-year anniversary of COVID. So a lot of ground to cover. Tim Steller is here, the award-winning columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. Tim is a frequent contributor to our show when I'm away on vacation, and we also try to bring him in on a regular basis on Friday. He's in, let's put it this way, in our co-media host rotation. Tim, we had Adelita Grijalva for a half an hour in the second half hour yesterday of our program, and a very interesting conversation. The first segment three, as you know, our segments are about 10 minutes.
Yep.
We devoted the 10 minutes to, of course, her dad and some of her reflections about that. And we also told everybody about what's going to be happening next week. The rosary is on Tuesday, then the services on Wednesday. And then where does she go from here? Because as I pointed out in the interview, Tim Steller, her career has pretty much mirrored her dad's.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I know, Tucson Unified School District Board,
where County she Board was of supervisors.
Supervisors. And so, yeah. Does, in many ways, it seems natural that she would make the decision to then follow in her dad's, his legacy. But she said she is holding off. She has so many responsibilities, and we can understand that.
Well, she has to go on your show.
Well,
I mean, things
to go
like
on
that.
The show. And so there'll be a decision, I would assume, then later next week. But we did hear, and you've pointed out in your column, it's kind of interesting about the Secretary of State, why he is showing interest.
Yeah, well, so here's the way I look at it. So this is these are Democrats. Of course, we know Regina Romero has said she's not going to run for the nomination for CD7. So that she and Adelita Grijalva are the two, you know, biggest elected officials in the Grijalva camp. And so if Romero isn't going to run, then that leaves Adelita Grijalva as the heir apparent within the Grijalva camp. I personally would be surprised if she doesn't run, but it is, you know, obviously it's a pain. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of
going
benefits.
Back and forth, right. All the flying, and she's right. Got a family, you know. And
right, right.
Does she want to uproot everybody? And so, I mean, I'm leaning toward thinking she is going to do it, but it's like you. I don't know.
Yeah,
I could,
right.
You can make a case either way.
For sure. Yeah, and, so. You know, I don't know. So this is my way of looking at the Fontes move. Which, you know, what he said is, you know, he confirmed the broad rumors that have been circulating that he is considering a run in CD7.
He's a Nogales native?
Yeah. Oh, and
is
I should
that the connection? This is the Secretary of State.
Right. So he's a Phoenix guy now, or a Phoenix area person now. He's been an attorney there for a while. Now he's Secretary of State. But two important points are, one, you don't have to reside in the district in order to run in the district for congressional districts.
Okay.
You just have to reside in the state. Number two, yes, he's from Nogales. He served in Yuma, I believe, at the Marine Corps station there. I mean, he's got roots in the district. Mm-hmm. And so it wouldn't be hard to, and I would assume he'd move down to Tucson or something if he is going to.
He would have to resign as Secretary of State? Is that?
Yeah, I believe the way it works is it's when you turn in your signatures that you have to resign to
Would Adelita have to resign as a supervisor?
That's my understanding. But let me get back to the political point real quick, which is my way of looking at Fontes's move of saying, yes, I'm looking at it, is to kind of put a reservation down and say, if Adelita Grijalva doesn't run, I'm here to run. And so I think this is just my deductions, but I don't think he would run against her. And I think he's just trying to kind of put in a, hey, everybody else clear out. I'm ready if she isn't. He's clearly ambitious. You know, rumors have circulated that he wanted to run against fellow Democrat Katie Hobbs for governor. He wants to do something, right? And he's also probably endangered as Secretary of State because Republicans have a lot of things they don't like about him. And, you know, if they can get their act together, they'll get a good, strong candidate to run against him. But I would be surprised if he doesn't run for something else. If it's not this seat, then another seat.
What about Daniel Hernandez? Supposedly there's a announcement coming that he's in.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a surprise. Alma Hernandez, his sister, who's a state legislator, has said she's not in. Mm-hmm. Consuelo Hernandez, who's also a sibling and a state legislator, has not commented that I know of, but I don't think she's running. Daniel, who did run for the Democratic nomination in what is now Juan Ciscomani's district, Daniel would not be a surprise.
And then there's another Daniel, the Republican, familiar Republican opponent.
Yeah, Gutierrez.
And he lost to Raul Grijalva approximately 2-1 on the vote in November.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to run. Wouldn't be surprised if he wins the nomination. Mm-hmm. It's a tough, tough district for a Republican to win in. I mean, especially if it's Adelita Grijalva.
Let's be realistic here.
Yeah, it's tough. Nice, you know, they're excited about the opportunity, but it's going to be tough.
All right. We've got a couple of items that I still want to talk with you about in about 4 minutes to do it. Is the Arizona Daily Star parent company Lee Enterprises for sale?
Well, I don't know if, I mean, it is traded on the public market. So in that sense, it could be bought, you know, kind of at any time. There is a billionaire, David Hoffman. He's a mini billionaire, not a mega billionaire like the ones we're used to hearing about. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got $1 to $2 billion to his name, as I understand it.
This is
the proletarian billionaires that we know of. He has been interested in buying Lee Enterprises, which is the parent company of the Arizona Daily Star, for some time. Now he's formally wanting to enter talks to buy the company. The Star is owned by 50% by Lee, 50% by Gannett, which is also the owner of the Arizona Republic. You know, if he were to buy the Lee Enterprises, it's possible that different things would happen at different properties, including the Star. I don't know. I would want the Star if I were him, because it's a profit-making institution that's shown every quarter in Lee Enterprises' financial filings. You can see we made, I don't know, $6 to $7 million of profit the last year. So if I were David Hoffman looking to keep assemble some Lee Enterprises properties, I definitely want this one.
All right. What's going to happen with banning homeless people from sleeping or camping in our washes within the city of Tucson.
So that vote happened Tuesday late in the night, and I reported on it in our political notebook today. My colleague Charlie Borla reported on it earlier this week. It was a very late night, and the votes were on banning camping in the washes were 3-3. It was Mayor Regina Romero was for it. Councilmember Karen Ulick was for it. And Nikki Lee, Councilmember Nikki Lee was for it. Mm-hmm. Kevin Dahl, Paul Cunningham, and Lane Santa Cruz were against it. So it came down to Richard Fimbres, who has been attending remotely since the pandemic began 5 years ago.
He has some illnesses he's been dealing with.
Yeah, and sometimes he's hard to hear and all that stuff. The understanding on the dais was that he simply didn't vote. You know, they called on him and he simply didn't vote. Mm-hmm. There is some discussion that he actually did try to vote.
Yeah, there's an audio out there from KVOA, yeah. Channel 4, that indicates that he said yes.
Yeah, and this is going to have to, I mean, it's a really untenable situation if we're trying to like find secret audios of this thing. His office did not respond to our request for comment. The clerk's office said, you know, as far as they knew, he did not vote. He just simply didn't vote. Mm. Now, he may have tried to and the audio was bad and that's the way it goes. But the people who voted no have the right to bring up the item again.
Okay.
So Paul Cunningham may do that, and then it would be clearer what everyone wants. Theoretically, if he really was a yes vote, then that would pass, and camping would be banned in the washes.
And that would be difficult to enforce?
I would think so, yeah. I mean, you push someone out one place and they go somewhere else. But the one thing I would say is there's a difference, you know, in any given wash, there's the bottom and then there's the top. And, you know, if you're in the bottom, especially during the rainy season, you're really taking a risk. The edges often still have trees and stuff, but you're not taking on the risk of being flooded out if you're down there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And real quickly, I thought the Supreme Court had said it is legal to enforce that based on the decision out of Grants Pass,
right.
Oregon, which is near Medford. I've been through there. But who knows how difficult that would be legally to enforce.
Well, right. And then if the city doesn't enforce it, they theoretically open themselves up to liability if there are any damages caused by people doing that. So it's a tough pickle they're in.
What are you going to work on there? We've got a column that's due.
Oh, please don't remind me. Or just write it for me, will you?
Yeah, it's due because of the online presence. It will be due here in about 24 hours.
Yeah.
For Sunday's print edition.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I love that we still have a print edition. It's so fun. I get it every day, and I don't read it.
I still subscribe. Yeah.
I mean, it's very expensive. I understand that.
I know. But I do it for people like you that I know at the paper and want to support you guys.
Well, I thank you for it.
Yeah.
Anyway, yes, I'm working on a column. No, I can't really define it well for you because I would put it this way, that just because they're not coming for you now doesn't mean they're not coming for you eventually.
Okay.
I'll leave up to you. You can imagine who I'm talking about.
But, yeah, well, get enough coffee and get you fueled to start putting those words to the computer there.
Okay. Thank you,
Bill. All right, Tim. Thank you very much. Tim Steller. Coming up next, our weekend watch with 101.7 The Drive, our sister station. The guy himself, the very popular morning guy, Matt Gentry, will be with me in a moment.
Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Time for a Weekend Watch with 101.7 The Drive, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. It's only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. Silver City in Grant County makes a great weekend getaway. Start your planning now for an enchanting getaway in the land of enchantment. Visit southwestnewmexico.org. Now with us to tell us, well, he's got some great tips for the weekend, The Morning Guy, a very popular host on 101.7 The Drive, Mr. Matt Gentry. Hey, Matt, how are you?
Hello, Bill. How are you, sir?
Stuff going on, as usual. Very busy time of year in Tucson.
Can I just say what an honor it is to be on your show?
Oh, you know? Really? What a great thing for you to say. You just made my day.
A Hall of Fame broadcaster.
Yeah.
You've been around forever. And
Long time, here in this market. Yeah. 37 years and in the business. Add on a couple of decades to that, and we get into some really longevity, yeah, as they say.
It really is true. I mentioned, yeah, your name, and people are always like, oh, I know Bill Buckmaster.
Oh, Bill Buckmaster. Yes. He's the guy that's interviewed over 7,000 people here in Tucson. Anyway, what's going on, Matt?
We got the 4th Avenue Spring Street Fair happening this weekend. A lot of stuff going on, actually. Thunder and lightning over Arizona Air Show. We've been hearing the planes over Tucson all day today.
Yeah.
But that's going on. We also have the Monster Jam. If you're into monster trucks and loud engines, that's the thing to go to.
This is like a demolition derby type of event.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Yeah.
And then this is pretty cool. It's at the Arizona Sonora Desert Museum. It's their Wind Down with Wildlife happening tomorrow from 6 to 9 p.m. And you can, of course, go to desertmuseum.org for all the details on that. It's truly just a great time all the way around. Again, lots of stuff happening, Wind Down with Wildlife, the Monster Jam.
Where's the Monster Jam?
It's at the Tucson Convention Center.
Okay.
Yeah. Have you ever been to a monster truck show?
No, I haven't.
It's interesting. I'm glad I went once because it was like pretty cool.
So I would envision it as like a monster truck crushing another vehicle.
Yes. The one thing I will say, though, if you do decide to go, I know it's for a younger audience,
of course,
you never know.
No.
It's incredibly loud. So wear earplugs.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, so the air show is going to be terrific. And we did, you guys were outside, you and Leslie Lois, and Leslie showed me some of the video that she shot.
Yeah.
And I think she has posted it to the 101.7 The Drive website.
Also, don't forget, Woofstock is happening this Sunday, 9 to 3 at Brandy Fenton Park. It's one of the biggest adopt-a-thons in the city. That's put on by Tucson Dog Magazine.
Yeah, a quick question about Drive It or Park It, one of your popular features in the morning with Matt Gentry. Percentage-wise, is it split pretty much 50-50 on what your listeners generally give a thumbs up or thumbs down to?
If I was to average it out, it would probably be 70-30 Drive It. For the most part.
Hmm.
And whenever you, Bill, suggest a song, the percentage is actually higher to Drive It. You got a real good pulse on good music, so I high five you.
I kind of look at myself as like the hobbyist for the drive.
Consulting
on 60s music.
1,000%.
Thank you very much, Matt. I hope you have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too, Bill.
Thanks. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, wholly responsible for the content of our program. On behalf of Matt Gentry and Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show, we all have the same common wish for everybody. Have a great weekend.